Among this year's Grammy Award nominees is a recording of a now classic musical first produced in 1927, Showboat. It features music by Jerome Kern and lyrics by Oscar Hammerstein II. John McGlynn, who directed and conducted the new recording, restored the songs that were cut before the 1927 Broadway opening. He also recorded an appendix that features songs written for later film and stage versions. McGlynn used the original orchestrations throughout. I asked John McGlynn why Showboat was such an important musical.
Everybody thinks of Oklahoma as the great watershed musical, the piece that, you know, finally integrated book and lyrics and music and dance and all of this. And in point of fact, many people, including myself, feel that Showboat in 1927 was the work that really did that. Showboat addressed issues which, for the time, were absolutely unheard of in the musical theater. You simply did not address issues of racial hatred, racial intermarriage, alcoholism, desertion by a husband. Things like that were just not part of what people went to the theater to see when they went to see a Florenz Ziegfeld musical.
How would you describe your overall vision in recording the complete Showboat?
It had always bothered me, both as an artist and as a fan, that Showboat had come to be known as the sort of light, frothy operetta. And I had always suspected that there were much deeper elements to it. And the more I studied the piece and the more I was able to get back to the original material and I saw what the full original scope of their conception was, I realized that this was really something extraordinarily dark and brooding and out of the ordinary. And in the recording, I felt it was absolutely imperative to restore all of the grit and the drama of the piece. There are several examples I can use, but the most important one and the one that's obviously caused the most discussion has been the restoration of the original language. I mean, the opening line of the show has always been a source of controversy. The curtain goes up on a levee in Mississippi, and it's in the 1880s, and the stage is full of these sweating black stevedores lugging cotton bales on their backs in the hot July sun, and the first words out of their mouth are, "Niggers all work on the Mississippi, niggers all work while the white men play." And Hammerstein wrote that word deliberately. It wasn't just the word that everybody used then and used thoughtlessly. He wanted to pick the word that would make this complacent society audience sit up and take notice and think about what life was like for these people 100 years ago in Mississippi.
Now, a lot of us know Old Man River opening with the lyrics, "Colored folk work on the Mississippi," or "Here we all work on the Mississippi." You restored it to the original, as you just described. But it caused quite a controversy within the cast that you were recording. A chorus of black singers who were supposed to sing it walked out. The baritone that was supposed to sing it walked out.
Yes.
Let's establish first why they wanted to walk out.
Well, what happened was it was very unfortunate that because of scheduling and rehearsals, I was not able to be present at the first chorus rehearsal. What we had planned to do was to use the chorus from the Glyndebourne production of Porgy and Bess, because I very much wanted to have a black chorus for the black music in Showboat. They got to the first rehearsal and they opened up their vocal scores, and of course the first word they see staring them in the face was "nigger." Now, they did not know the show, they didn't know the context, they didn't know what the dramatic purpose of the word was, and they just went yipes, and they said, "No way, sorry, we can't do this."
There's an irony here, I think, and that is that you ended up having to use a white chorus to sing Old Man River because the black chorus didn't want to sing the original text. And this is part of your attempt to get the most authentic recording possible.
Well, not only authentic, but I would like to think the most socially conscious.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that happened like that, whether it be racial prejudice or genocide or anything, it can, if we forget about it, it can happen again. And I think it's very dangerous to try to pretend that things like this never happened.
In your recording of Showboat, you reinstated a very beautiful song, and I think this is the perfect example of the dark and brooding atmosphere that you found when you found the complete manuscript for Showboat. The song I'm thinking of is Misery's Coming Round, and this is a song that foreshadows the tragic turn of events about to happen. It's very beautiful. Why was it deleted?
First of all, at the first performance in Washington, the first preview out of town, the show ran over 4 hours, which was simply not feasible within the format and economic market of a Broadway musical. So things had to go. And anything, I mean, the first casualties, of course, were anything that was not absolutely essential to the progression of the plot. And Misery, as beautiful as it is 6 minutes of atmosphere and mood painting rather than something specific happens that moves the plot along. That's the practical aspect. The other side of it is that Florenz Ziegfeld was terrified of it. And Ziegfeld absolutely was so afraid that it was going to kill the show stone cold, smack in the middle of the first act. And I can see him, you know, at rehearsal in my mind's eye, you know, sitting there chewing on a cigar and going, it's a downer, boys, it's a downer. But it's very interesting about Misery because its cutting is tragic because its themes are used as underscoring throughout the entire show. And you hear all these references to this dark, brooding theme without ever hearing its original statement and knowing what its context is.
Misery's coming around. Damn misery's coming around. I knows it's coming around. Don't know to who. Misery's coming around. Damn misery's coming around. We knows it's coming around. Don't know to who.
I think your recording is part of a trend in re-recording Broadway shows now of using opera singers to perform. And I was wondering if you think that the voices of opera singers are always appropriate.
I think most of the time they're very inappropriate.
Uh-huh.
And it really depends on the piece. Now, people have said, oh, well, you're recording Showboat and you're using opera singers. And to which my response is, no, actually, that thought never went through our heads. What we did is we recorded Showboat and cast the people who could sing it.
Do you think that your recording is an example of a trend in reevaluating the place of the musical theater in American musical life?
Boy, I sure hope so. I mean, so much of my career has been devoted to that, not just with Showboat, but with all the shows that I've worked on. When these shows were being written, nobody thought of them as great art. They were commodities. They were designed to make the authors and the producers money. And that's really all anybody thought about. Now, I'm convinced that in late at night in the dark recesses of their studies, the composers themselves did think of it as art. They knew they were creating beautiful music. But even so, they still treated it very much as a commodity. Orchestrations were not preserved. Manuscripts were not even preserved. If a song or a complete show wasn't a big hit, nobody felt it was important to preserve it in case it were going to be reevaluated by posterity 50 years later. What was the miracle that created people like Irving Berlin and Richard Rodgers and Jerome Kern and Cole Porter and Dietz and Schwartz, all at this one time, these incredible people? And artistry like that, and quite apart from the style has changed, but just that kind of artistry doesn't seem to exist en masse today. People just didn't think that it was all going to end. So I think now, you know, people are realizing that we've lost something incredibly precious and we better find it and reclaim it and preserve it as fast as we can.